go with a friend. Definitely not the first podcast featuring a discussion of pop culture and why we think you should like what we like. I should trust me because you're a librarian.
So I think that in the script, probably the best thing to do consistently is the tagline.
You should trust us. We can read. I'm Anna, and it is already late.
I'm Aline, and I'm a morning person.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to be very coherent and to the point. Every couple of weeks, we'll get together and chat about a pop culture topic or two, what we think and how we feel. We'll end the show with our current obsessions. This is episode number 84, the Marvel Cinematic Universe and bullet journaling, not at the same time.
Although, we do occasionally address the Marvel Cinematic Universe in our bullet journals.
Yeah.
Mostly when we're trying to keep
Black
track
Panther.
Of what we've seen and how many times we've seen it.
So I was trying to figure out why, after stating vehemently on this podcast several times that we didn't like superhero movies with dudes in them, why we decided to go and watch all of these Marvel Cinematic Universe films.
I know.
And I think it's Black Panther's fault.
But okay, maybe it's Black Panther's fault for you.
Okay.
For me, I am a completist.
Yeah.
I start reading a series with the first book.
Yeah.
And I read the series in order until I'm done. Maybe I don't read the whole series forever, but I read it until I'm done. And when I moved here, I abandoned watching all of the Marvel movies because I didn't have my buddy who I watched them with and who was infinitely patient explaining them to me. And so I was like, okay, well, I live here now, and you're not that interested in movies that aren't Wonder Woman, so I'm cool with that. And we watched Ant-Man and Deadpool, and we didn't really watch
a lot
of the
X-Men movies, right?
That came out in the last 3 years. And I needed to catch up, because now that Black Panther has sucked us back in,
right,
I'm going to need to watch Infinity War, and I'm going to need to know what's going on.
So let's talk about, we'll talk about Age of Ultron or other ones in which it does not make any sense and it doesn't matter how much backstory you have.
Right. We'll get to that. But the reason I wanted to watch them was,
yes,
to make sure that I knew what I needed to know.
So we watched, let me count here. We watched, in the run-up to this, 6 or 7 or 8 that we had missed. And we had seen separately earlier in time things like Iron Man and the first Avengers movie. And Aline has seen The Incredible Hulk, but
yeah.
I have not. But we're talking about 18 films.
18. When she said there were 18, I was flabbergasted. And I don't use the word flabbergasted
lightly. Over the course
lightly.
Of 10 years. And all of our catch-up, which includes the most recent before Black Panther, Thor, Ragnarok, we have gotten them all from the library. We haven't seen them in the theater, which has enabled us to pause them and do them over 2 nights or watch the second half of Thor Ragnarok twice.
It was only the last 40 minutes that I needed to see again.
Okay.
Because I was dozing in and out.
I'm so tired. So we're not going to spend too much time on this. We just want the world to know that we are now up to date. And so we have strong opinions that are based in facts.
And we are willing to share them. Also, we are happy to provide you with viewer's advisory on the topic of the MCU movies.
Yeah,
although
you should go see Black Panther.
Most of our friends
right away
have already figured out where they are. And yes, we think you should see Black Panther over and over and over.
You don't need to see any of the other movies in order to enjoy Black Panther, I would say.
You don't.
There were a couple of characters in Civil War or something. I don't know. Ultron? Maybe both?
Age of Ultron, I think it was. No, maybe it was Civil War.
It was both.
Right.
Because the arms dealer guy was in Ultron.
Claw.
Right. I wonder if that is an homage to Inspector Gadget. Probably not.
Do-do-do-do-do. Inspector Gadget.
So anyway, there were a few characters that when we saw them, we were like, oh, they were just flinging those out of nowhere.
Right, which is what the whole thing does, and there's crossover events, and there's things like that. Are we going to talk about the individual movies?
No, we're not going to do that. We're just going to do our rank. I just want to talk about
sex, what we think. Sex, baby.
I would like to discuss.
There you go. That's gonna work. If you say discuss, it'll work.
What we think the Marvel
and how we feel
movies. You're gonna hear the first on-air murder on Bellwether Friends very soon. Let's discuss what we think the Marvel movies do well as a whole.
Well, I have to say that of all of the movies in all of the world, the Marvel movies most consistently include a unnecessary 40-minute battle.
Yeah.
They do that very, very well.
That's on the other list. Now, I want a genuine answer to the question, what is it that they're doing well? I can give you my list. Generally, they're humorous in a way that I appreciate.
I like the lightness, and I also know that canonical fans don't appreciate the lightness. Perfect. In some of the bleakness, which makes me like more the movies as a non-superhero comic reader of yore. The MCU movies are my knowledge of these characters and their stories, and they present them in a way that I enjoy. I am able to acknowledge the problematic nature of some things, which are going to be on the next list, and I have fun watching them, even though I always doze off during the 40-minute battles.
I like the costumes in general.
I really like it.
Especially Black Panther.
The costumes. Yeah, I like the costumes a lot.
We were just appreciating Valkyrie's costume from Thor Ragnarok.
Yes, specifically, I appreciated that her breastplate did not seem to be out of proportion to the rest of her form.
Yep. And I also appreciate that the main characters don't die, or have not died yet.
And I thought that was in that article, that was one of the problems that was listed.
It was.
With the movies.
But for me, that's not a problem. For me, I'm like, I want the continuity of knowing, like, oh, these people will get back together again, even if they're fighting now. No one's gonna die, although Don Cheadle may be paralyzed.
Well, and they killed...
Wait, should we maybe say that we're going to talk about these movies in detail, maybe? And so, spoiler alert?
I think that this can serve as a spoiler alert. I think that it is important to recognize that not unlike the Fast and Furious movies,
right,
it doesn't really matter what happens in each specific one.
Yep, yep.
So, spoiler alert, and we're going to talk about stuff. But they killed Aaron Taylor Johnson, and I don't remember what his character name was.
Nope. I wouldn't call him a major character.
He was like a zippy guy with powers.
Yep.
Wait, was he Quicksilver?
No.
Or is that an X-Man?
X-Man.
See? Right. So they killed Quicksilver in an Avengers movie, so you should be careful about that.
Shh.
So, also Silver Surfer.
Oh, okay. The Marvel Cinematic Universe, for purposes of this, does not include the X-Men or Deadpool, even though it could, because they are all Marvel characters.
But we're just doing a half an episode on this.
Right. And it does now include Spider-Mans.
Spider-Man.
Whatever plural you choose to use. So, I have a list of things that I wish they would do better.
Wait, is that it for the good things?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
I mean, I have volume, which I guess means that they put out a lot of movies.
We appreciate that. We want there to be a lot of movies. When we aren't paying attention for 3 years, we want to have 8 movies to catch up on.
Yeah,
please,
yeah,
and thank you.
For sure.
So what do you want them to do better? I know one thing. I know.
Okay,
I know one.
Go for it.
Get some ladies up in there.
Hey, that's the top of my list.
Yeah. So we knew we wanted to see Infinity War because of Black Panther. We heard good things about Thor Ragnarok having a couple of ladies in it, and we were really on board for Valkyrie and Hela being present, thank you. But it didn't get us into the theaters for Ragnarok, so we need some lady action, please and thank you.
Captain Marvel is supposed to come out next year.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. So along those lines, more people of color. Black Panther's ratio of people of color to white people was ideal as far as I am concerned.
There were 2 white guys, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a little heavy on the white guys as far as I'm concerned. I'd be okay with a white lady if you got Peggy Carter in.
Okay, great. And I'm going to go ahead and say openly gay characters.
Right, Valkyrie is super gay, and they obscure
bisexual.
It as much as they can.
I believe it's bisexual.
Okay.
Let Bucky and Steve be openly together already, is what my note says.
Who's Tony with?
We have to ask Angie?
Right. We'll check in with her and let you guys know. You might know already.
I'm sure there's Stony fanfic.
Yes, there is Stony fic, but it's Stucky all the way. Man.
Whatever. I mean, but just make it main text. Because the subtext is so hilarious.
Oh my goodness, is it ever.
Shorter fight scenes. Shorter movies.
Hmm.
Better music.
Yes, there was an article on the internet about that.
Yeah, about how it's purposely boring and non-memorable music, but you know what? That's not really something to shoot for.
And it would be really cool if there was, like, a little thread that joined the Avengers together somehow. When you think about the whole, like, dun-dun-dun-dun,
yeah.
You know it's an Indiana Jones movie without anybody telling you. And there's going to be Indiana Jones stuff going on. They could have done that in Tomb Raider. If they'd have gone dun 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 in Tomb Raider, we would have peed our pants.
I have too much Joss Whedon.
There was only two Joss Whedons. And that's too much Joss Whedons in 18 movies. So this is coming from a Buffy fan. I don't have a chip on my shoulder about Joss quite yet. Although, you know, he's a bit of a bro.
But he does the Agents. I mean, he's behind Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the TV show, which I have tried to watch. But
we've both tried so hard to watch. Yeah. And I love Clark Gregg. I love Clark Gregg
I love
so
Ming-Na.
Much.
I mean,
I forgot about Ming-Na. Holy cats. She was on ER.
I know. I'm aware. So one of the things that we read about the problems in the Marvel Cinematic Universe was, quote, the Avengers cause every event they end up avenging.
There was an article about that.
Yeah, so it's kind of hard to be like, wow, these guys are so great. And I say guys on purpose here.
Because they're all guys.
Except for Scarlett Johansson carrying the load. I mean, could we not kill off Jeremy Renner and replace him with the lady?
Let's
Hawkeye.
Replace him with his wife.
Yeah. That's
I love Linda Cardellini.
So, what we did as a little exercise is we put the 18 movies in a spreadsheet and we independently ranked them. So we're just going to talk briefly about where we
departed
from the rankings. Top
Wait.
One...
So,
oh, you want to start at the bottom?
No, I just want to do this, like, sort of give you a little bit of context for this. We made a list of the 18 movies, and we each ranked them, and then I sorted the list in Anna's order, and so she's going to move through her list, and I am going to fight her with gentle love as we go. We agree upon many of them, like, most of our single-digit rankings match up. And
we're going to depart pretty quickly, though.
And we have some departures, and I think that they might spark some interesting discussion.
No, I think
discussion.
I'm going to win you over.
I don't think so.
Okay, so number one, surprising no one, is
Black Panther.
And number two is Guardians of the Galaxy, mostly because that's the first movie I got to see in a theater with you.
Yes, I was thinking it was like first real life movie date.
So I don't.
But wait, we liked it. It was
we
fun.
Like
it was more inclusive than many of these movies. It made us laugh. It
had green and blue people.
80s pop music.
Yeah.
It was there
the
were
soundtrack.
Things about it that worked for us besides just that we got to see it together.
Kirk was in it.
We love Kirk. Thanks, James Gunn.
Okay, so my number three is Captain America, the First Avenger. That is the first Captain America movie set in the 40s. But you have it as number 11.
I have it as number 11. I don't... Why do you... Is it just because of Agent Carter being there?
No, but here. Here's my list.
No.
Tommy Lee Jones. Hugo Weaving. Richard Armitage. Stanley Tucci. Hayley Atwell.
So these are good things, and it's a good movie, and I don't like Captain America.
I don't really care that much about Captain America either, but it's got Stanley Tucci in it.
Right, but it's called Captain America.
So?
Well, when I am looking at a list that doesn't have previews and pictures next to it, I'm judging by words a little bit, too.
Okay, well,
so you're not going to... You haven't, like, brought me around because Hugo Weaving is Redhead or whatever his name is.
Red Skull?
Yes, Redhead, Red Skull, whatever. And so he's not Hugo Weaving-y. And I really don't like Nazis.
I don't either.
I don't want to see them even be defeated. I have, like,
all the Captain America ones are super bad associations.
And there's so much Nazi in Captain America, and I just can't.
Okay.
And, yeah.
But what about Wonder Woman?
For reasons. I don't know. They're not Nazi. They're not as Nazi-ish. Because it's World War One.
I know. Okay, so then we go back to being in alignment, pretty much. My next one is Spider-Man Homecoming.
So she had it as 4, and I had it as 5, and so that's fine. Because we liked it. We just watched it. It was good. It was like a good teen movie. There was goofy teen action.
Yeah, we liked his sidekick friend.
Loved Ned. But I really liked the teen movie blended with a superhero. I think they did it better than Tobey Maguire. And I know that for a lot of people, Tobey Maguire is Spider-Man. And there have been a bunch of Spider-Mans. And I'm looking forward to the animated one with multiple Spider-Manses.
Yep, me too.
So there we are with that. And then...
then we diverge again. I like the second Guardians of the Galaxy better than you did. I have it as my number 5.
Right. And so a little bit of backstory. 18 is too many things for me to put in order. So when I started out with my list of 18, I had to scan through real fast and assign A, B, C, D, F letter grades to them. And then I took the A's and I put them in order. And I took the B's and I put them in order. And that's how I ended up doing it. So I can tell you that Captain America the First Avenger got a C, and...
Because of Nazis.
But then Spider-Man Homecoming got an A. But Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 got a B, because it wasn't Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1.
Okay.
Or something. And so then next...
well, next I put the original Iron Man, which I remember liking, but I can't remember anything else about it. So that's why it's up high, but
Well, that's why it's got number 3 for me. I loved it. And I have not gone back to see it again. I have seen it.
I was gonna say, maybe we should watch it.
We might want to rewatch it just to see, because it had romance. It did Tony and Pepper really well. And it had humor, but it, like, laid out the humor, and then the humor didn't govern everything. It wasn't, like, off-the-cuff quips throughout. It was like, this guy is acerbic, and then we're going to go from here.
Yes.
And so I had Iron Man as number 3.
And then you had Thor Ragnarok as number 4, and I had it as number 7.
So we had Iron Man and Thor Ragnarok in the same order. They were just a little higher in my list than they were in yours. And oh my gosh, so we just watched Thor Ragnarok last night and a little bit of it this morning. And it was so much fun. I loved Korg more than anything. I want Taika Waititi to
just voice wander around our
everything.
House.
I would like him to wander around our house and say, oh look, he's alive.
Maybe he can voice our cats.
Oh my gosh, we're going to be implementing a Kiwi accent.
The reason I have it down at 7 is because if he hadn't inserted himself as a character, I would have not found that movie nearly as charming.
Point.
And so the Thor parts and the Asgard parts and the Ragnarok parts, if the director hadn't been so charming, I would be like, okay, well, it was better than The Dark World.
Excellent use of Jeff Goldblum.
Yes.
In his cast-off role from...
I know which one you mean, but it's not coming to me.
Right, I want to call it District 9 because I have that in my head, but that's an alien movie.
You can look it up.
That's not the one with the Hunger Games! Yes. It was the Hunger Games movies.
Okay. So next we have Ant-Man. Was it 6 for you and 8 for me?
Which I think is pretty on par. Equal. We liked Ant-Man. So Ant-Man, we watched it at home together because a friend gave it to me for my birthday
no,
the first year.
We watched it in the theater, I think.
Did we see it in the theater? Mm-hmm.
I can check the tape.
No, that's fine.
I think we saw it in the theater.
Well, we also own
it. We also own it. The reason it's not higher is I was reading a review that...
they didn't do the lady well.
Yep. But hopefully Ant-Man and the Wasp will help rectify.
I'm glad she gets a better suit than him.
That's coming up soon.
We have loved the previews.
So next I have original Thor, the Kenneth Branagh, at 9, and you have him as 13. So my reasons for liking this are kind of similar to your reasons for liking Iron Man. There was romance in it.
Yep.
And it was funny. And it was set on Earth, so there didn't have to be, like, Asgardiana. Right. So it was like, Thor's a fish out of water and he doesn't have his powers or whatever it was. I forget. Doesn't matter.
Like when he has coffee. I mean, if you remember
right.
the diner
that
scene with the coffee,
part.
It's hilarious. And I had it lower because I liked the romance part, but I was horrified at Natalie Portman's scientist character losing her mind Thor.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like you can be compelled by someone's allure without losing yourself, especially as an intellectual woman. And so I thought that characterization was really problematic, and that's why it fell as low for me. Because I remember being furious at her being sort of blithery about him, because I felt like it erased her brilliance where they could, I feel strongly, they could have coexisted.
Okay, so we came to the same conclusion that Captain America Civil War was at the number 10 spot.
We did. We matched up. We have matched up like a couple of times. Match up toward the end, too.
Right. Seeing the previews for this, where everyone was fighting with each other, I was like, why are they fighting? Ah! But the actual plot made sense. Like, you know, they have been off causing problems and destroying cities, and maybe there should be consequences for that, or maybe there should be something that keeps them in check. This seems reasonable.
I loved the imposition of sanctions on their destruction, because I spend those, when I am not sleeping through the 40-minute battles, I am getting indignant about the property damage. And I know that that's a sign of my age, and I should be able to just, like, jump in and really enjoy that all of the buildings are crumbling and shattering.
You like
and
a disaster movie, though.
I like it. I want a natural disaster, though. I don't want the Hulk to, like, knock over the Empire State Building. That's just rude.
What about Pacific Rim? Where does that fall?
So Pacific Rim is aliens, and aliens aren't real.
Yeah, but robots are real, giant robots.
Right, but they're fighting the aliens, and so they're not doing anything wrong.
Okay. I was just wondering.
The Avengers are just, like, saying, let's take Loki to Earth. And then it's like, Loki's going to wreak havoc, and you're going to have to stop him, and you're going to wreak more havoc trying to stop him.
Yeah. I'm not a fan.
Messed up. I also don't like it when families have food fights in their own kitchens in rom-coms. So, okay. Yeah.
So
who's going to clean this up?
I have Iron Man 3 at number 11, but I can't remember anything about it except that there were lots of Iron Man suits flying around at the end.
Yeah, I kind of liked that. I put it down at 14 because it had a D. We haven't talked about this yet, but on our list, we marked who directed everything, and there are a lot of twosies, but there are nothing beyond twosies. And so Jon Favreau did Iron Man 1 and 2, and Iron Man 1 came before Disney bought the franchise, and then he was gone for Iron Man 3. He was a producer on it, but it wasn't like so much his vision. And I think that you see a disjointedness. You see the overall producer guy's thumbs on the necks of some pretty brilliant directors.
Male
for
directors.
All their dudenesses.
Right.
And so I felt like Iron Man 3 dropped off of that because I was enjoying the particular brand of broiness that was being conveyed in Iron Man,
in
1,
Iron
and
Man
2.
1 and 2. I like the part in Iron Man 3 where he's just off the grid and in that kid's garage or whatever. Just like, okay. Next, I have Doctor Strange at 12 and you have him at 8.
Yeah, and I made the list before I read the article about the cultural appropriation.
Well, so we'll put that article in the show notes, but it's not anything I didn't see on Twitter about how they whitewashed a role that was Asian in the comics, and also the trope of white guy goes to the Eastern mystics and finds himself, and his power is super tired and annoying. And the article also said that there were a lot of things that were enjoyable about it.
I really liked the standalone-iness of it. I loved Black Panther for not making me have seen all of the others. And I felt like Doctor Strange did that too. And I want that in some of these movies. I want just a little splash of them. I don't really like Benedict Cumberbatch that much, but I really liked the character of his cape. And
yes.
I really liked his awesome building.
I like his librarian friend.
Yes.
I would like a movie about him.
Yes, we would like a movie about him. I liked, he was kind of housey at the beginning, and I love house. I'm a terrible, terrible house lover.
Well, he also has been known to play Sherlock Holmes.
Hmm.
And I have farther down on this list than it probably merits the original Avengers 13, and you have it at 7.
It is at 7. It was the lowest ranked of the A's in my grading system, and it got an A solely because of the shawarma scene.
Okay. Which is after credits, yes?
Yes, it's the after credits scene. I mean, there are shawarma references in the movie, right, and that's what makes the after credits scene. Right. After they've destroyed the entire city, they're slumped in a restaurant. Spoiler alert. It was so hilarious to me that it has carried that whole movie all the way up into the top 10, and it gave it an A, but it ended up being at the bottom of my A's.
So I had it up higher, and then I remembered that I didn't like the part where everyone was, like, snippy with each other for half the movie because they were, like, being forced to work together. Everyone gets together and becomes the Avengers movie.
Doesn't Nick get them all together, and so they have to work together and they don't want to?
I don't remember the circumstance, and maybe that bears rewatching too.
Are you going to add it to the list? You wrote Iron Man
there. I will. I'm going to reserve my judgment on that, but for right now, it is above Iron Man 2 on my list, which is next.
You have Iron Man 2 down pretty far. I have it down pretty far too.
See?
Interesting. Why do I have Iron Man 3? Oh, I had Iron Man 3 below it. You had it above it. That's weird. I had them both firmly in my D's, I think. That's interesting.
So now we reach the bottom of the list.
Yeah, and we are not far off for our bottom three. She doesn't have an... Oh, right.
I didn't watch The Incredible Hulk, so...
Right, but 15, 16, 17, 18 are all jumbled together for us. They're all four in those bottom slots in slightly different orders.
So we'll just talk about them as a unit, because they're all pretty bad. I mean, according to our metrics, which are skewed. So Thor the Dark World was just, it's interminable, relies a lot on the Loki-Thor relationship, which I don't really care about.
I really, really don't care about.
I super don't care about it. Yeah, I can hardly even remember what happened in it, but I'm glad that Idris Elba is getting work.
Yeah.
Then Avengers Age of Ultron, which was a real mess.
Oh my gosh.
And it's so long.
I spent the whole movie feeling so bad for Paul Bettany, who signed on to those Iron Man movies just to do some voiceover work, and then got, like, railroaded into being on screen.
Yeah.
And with terrible makeup.
And so this is not... no doubt unpopular opinion, but pretty much at the bottom of our rankings here is special mention for The Incredible Hulk with, who was the guy in it?
It was the Edward Norton, the Ed Norton one, directed by Louis Leterrier. He was just a whiny, sulky Hulk who nobody liked, and it was a little arty, but not, and it really just doesn't really measure in. But,
so at the bottom...
At the bottom.
...is Captain America the Winter Soldier.
Oh my gosh.
Which is so long.
Oh my gosh.
And so boring.
Oh my gosh. To us. And it's interesting because it is pretty widely considered among the top of the universe.
That's nice.
Right? But so we are here to bring you unpopular opinions.
We don't...
Trademark Bellwether Friends.
We don't care about Captain America.
No, we don't.
And
if he's not kissing Bucky, then...
What's the point?
Right.
And this one, more than most, has interminable fight scenes. It's like a fight scene goes to another fight scene, which goes to another fight scene, which goes to an underground bunker.
And they told three friends.
Exploded.
And they told three friends.
And then...
And so on. And so on. Yeah.
We are looking forward to being up to speed when we see Infinity War, but I have learned as of today that Infinity War is a two-parter, and we're not getting the second part until next year, so I'm not getting that excited.
Right. That knowledge is possibly going to keep us from seeing it right away. We're not going to be there opening night. We're probably going to read a review. We're going to need to know Black Panther minutes of screen time.
We're especially going to need to know if any Black Panther characters are killed, because then we're definitely not going.
Right. And we mean any Black Panther characters.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, there aren't any unlikable Black Panther characters.
Right.
So, it's right. Not like...
We were pretty upset when they killed Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah, I was upset when Killmonger got killed.
Right, I forgot about Killmonger.
He needed a family, man.
He did.
So, let's segue into bullet journaling.
We don't have, like, a segue. We wrote some notes about this Marvel Universe stuff in our bullet journals.
Yes, there you go.
See? There's our segue.
You segued us. Congratulations.
So we have been collectively bullet journaling approaching 2 years now. We started in June of 2016 or so. I started in June of 2016, and you joined in within a month.
Yeah, I think it was July or August. To put it into perspective, I'm working on starting my third book.
And I am in the first third of my fifth book, but we have very different approaches.
Well, so tell me a little bit about your approach. How many months do you fit in a book?
Well, it depends on the number of pages in the book. My first four books were all identical giveaway blank books from library vendors, and they each held 5 months. And the one I'm working on now holds 10 months. It's got more pages. The way I do it is I set it up as basically a page a day planner with a hand-drawn month at the beginning, and there are some blank pages interspersed. I don't follow the true layout plans of some bullet journals. I've talked about this before, and we all know and believe and preach that the bullet journal only works if it works for you because it's yours. So the way I have it is I have a few lists in the front, and I have a month page, and then I have individual pages for every day that month, and then I have a couple of blank pages, and I have the next month page. I use my page-a-day pages as a calendar. I don't creep my way through my book page by page like some methods do. I draw my calendars and number my pages and have my months out several months in advance. I have this one drawn out through September so that I can write vacations this summer and meetings and trainings that I want to go to and conferences that I know about and holidays and scheduling and peep things. So it's all in one place, so I don't have to be like, I have to remember that this is happening in October.
We're going to talk a minute about flexibility, but is there something that you think is essential for any bullet journal, no matter what approach you're taking?
Yes, I think you need an index to find things that you're doing.
So you need page numbers.
Page numbers, and some people do an index at the front, and some people do an index at the back. And the index basically tells me that I have February on pages 17 to 46. But then I have some blank things where when the blank pages that are in between my months is where I might put prep for an episode.
Right.
Or a list of day trips that we are considering. Or a brainstorm of quick and easy meals. And I have a lot of different, and I have like a general packing list on some page somewhere. And I
That's what indexes are for, to help right, figure out where that is.
To find that. And I have to preface the whole, any conversation about a bullet journal with the information that I am and always have been my entire life, a compulsive list maker. And this keeps all of the little scraps of paper that I used to always have on my desk and in my bag and in my pockets in one place.
Yeah, that's basically the benefit for me as well, because I was always pulling little pieces of paper with mysterious writing on them out of different pockets and on my desk and things. I'm going to read...
Sometimes I was laundering them.
Right. I'm going to read a little bit from Dot Journaling, A Practical Guide by Rachel Wilkerson Miller, which is a previous mention on the podcast. It says... Dot journaling is good for people who like pen and paper to-do lists, people who have a million to-do lists floating around, people who are really into setting goals. Not so much for me, but people who like stationery, journaling, scrapbooking, beautiful pens, etc. People who really love planners, people who really want to love planners or who want to be more organized, people who would really like to keep a journal diary but are having trouble sticking with the habit. It says, but none of these are requirements for enjoying dot journaling. And ultimately, dot journaling is for nice people who want to write bleep down and get bleep done.
I'll agree with that. And if you look back at a past day in my bullet journal, any random given day, you will find a list of things that I did. Mostly, I write down what I eat, and I don't write down item by item what I eat. I write down what I had for breakfast and what I had for lunch and what I had for dinner. I don't like document snacks, but it's sort of like that helps me sort of like hang my structure off of something. And so it helps me think about like, oh, we ran these errands. And because I struggle with to-do lists and feelings of accomplishment and feelings of not accomplishment, my bullet journal tends to be a list of things accomplished. So we like do a to-do list in the household for a weekend, but I don't have that in my bullet journal in the same way as like a daily to-do list. I have overall to-do lists at the beginning of my bullet journal. I have a daily list and a weekly list and a monthly list and a work list, because a lot of the crap that I need to do every day is the same every single day.
Well, yeah.
And so I need to feed the cats, and I ought to floss, and I should drink lots of water, and so on. And there are things that need to happen every week and things that need to happen every month. And this goes back years to organization that I have done with friend of the podcast, Kelly, where we sat down and made these huge lists, and then we like redid the lists in different orders. So we had this like reams long master list of everything that we needed to do in our lives. And then we took those items and we put them on lists of frequency of how often they needed to happen. So we ended up with these lists of daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annual. And then we took those same things and we resorted them in a different way as to how long the tasks took. So we had another list of things that took an hour and things that took 3 hours and things that took a half day and things that took a full day and things that took more than one day. It was awesome.
Where are these lists?
I think they're on the baby computer that I don't use that much.
Okay.
So they're probably on a backup drive and also on a baby computer. Would you like copies?
I'm just curious.
Okay.
I mean, it would be an interesting update to see how it would shake out now.
Right. Well, I don't own the same houses that I did then.
I know. So I'm going to talk a little bit about my process, which is totally different from your process.
Right, right. It's
because
fascinating.
Because I sort of started this in a half-hearted way, where I was like, oh, Aline's doing it, so I'll try.
I have a pretty blank book. I'll sit at the table with Aline while she's messing with hers.
I like stickers.
We didn't even talk about the stickers yet.
So I have been using more of the approach that she describes in Dot Journaling, A Practical Guide, which is you start with a blank book, you put page numbers in an index in, and then whatever you decide you need that page to be, like you need a to-do list on it, it's a to-do list. You need to put a calendar in there, put a calendar in there. So that was my first book, was more like that. And my second book, I guesstimated how many pages I was using per month, and I put my monthly calendars in so that I have a set number of months that this book is going to go.
And you spaced it out so that you had your dozen or 13 or 14
whatever
pages in between each of your drawn months.
Yeah.
Which you drew at the beginning so that you could like hang your future calendar off it.
Yeah, I do a lot of scrapbooky stuff.
You do more scrapbooky stuff than I do. I do the page a day thing and then like tape in movie stubs.
I have elaborate scrapbook arrangements for like concerts and things that we go to.
I have a cool page for Phantom of the Opera, but I did not have nearly enough space for the Waffle House commemoration that I wanted to do.
Right. I have blank space for that, and at some point during the beginning middle of this second book, I thought, oh, I want to see what else is out there and what I could add. And so I experimented with a bunch of stuff that I found in this dot journaling book and in another dot journaling book, which was not as helpful. So one of the things that I always keep is a list of books I'm in the middle of, because I'm always in the middle of about 20 books at any given time. So I have 4 different tabs as a reading log. Like, I know I'm going to need a million reading log pages because I keep track of the title and the author and what format I'm reading it in and when I start it and when I finish it. And I also have a separate list for books I'm interested in reading. And I know I'm going to have calendars. And so what I've done in preparation for this third book is look at what's worked and what hasn't worked and what I want to put in it. And some of the things that I tried that aren't working, or thought there was like a TV tracker where you crossed off each episode of a TV show that you watched and you could see what you were in the middle of. But basically, we never watch anything that we're in the middle of as far as like seasons of television. So there's nothing for me to cross off there. So I made an extremely complex tracking system that I have not used. TV in progress. It's on page 52 here. Here are all the things we're in the middle of. Ah. I could cross off a few X-Files episodes.
Right.
But
it's pretty.
Oh, well, Doctor Who. I could cross off Doctor Who, too.
So yeah, there are things that we watch, and you could spell out the episodes of One Day at a Time season 2.
Yeah, I could. And Black Lightning. But anyway, so this one is not necessary, I think. But I was wondering if I should have a master index of things that are in different books that I'm not moving. I'm like, I'm not going to move this TV tracker to my new book.
So one of the things that I did with like my packing list and my road trip list and stuff is that rather than referring back to old books that are in the bookcase upstairs, I took pictures of them for reference.
Whoa,
and I favorited them in my phone so I can look at them if I need to. And I haven't referred back, although the packing list will be in order this summer when we go on vacation.
Some things that I experimented with but I'm not sure I would need in the future is I was listening to an audiobook that was 52 discs long or whatever it was. And I needed some way to, like, make myself feel like I was making progress through it. So I made myself a little track. So every time I finished a track, I got to fill in a little square. And I finally got through it.
Was that satisfying?
It was satisfying.
We have bought pens that we want to write in our bullet journals with. We have dug pens out of our holdings that we want to write in our bullet journals with. We have employed stickers that we had lying around, and we have bought a whole lot of washi tape.
We have.
Over the last couple of years. And we use them. We decorate the edges of pages, and we put our movie ticket stubs in with thematically appropriate washi tape when available. We apparently don't have any washi tape that
says political intrigue.
Says political intrigue. But we manage to match things up. And we use washi tape to stick things in. And I use it to just, like, decorate a page, to treat it like a sticker. After I've written my list in my handwriting that is not scrolly or floofy or pretty, I just have these, like, handwritten lists in my calendar. I will, like, put a stripe of washi tape across the bottom or across the side to jazz it up.
So I have 2 things that I think I will carry forward. One of them is, like, a chore or it's a chore list, but it's also when did I last do something? And the things that are going to be more useful to me are when did I last have a physical appointment? When did I last vacuum the house? The next time I have to make a dermatology appointment, I do it every 2 years or something. So I'm never going to remember that unless I have it written down somewhere.
Right.
And I also have been tracking my bill paying, like when it happens in the month. Now, I've never been the type to balance my checkbook, and so I have these little boxes where I can X off if that thing has been paid for that month, and it has helped me to figure out, like, do I have enough money or not for this thing that I need to do?
Okay then.
Right, so I am looking forward to... Oh, I should say that I don't have the page a day thing that you have, but I do like a page for every week with stuff that I am trying to get done at home and at work. And
right. You have like a calendar post-it at the bottom of the page, and you have a home to-do list and a work to-do list.
Right.
And you have one of those for every week.
Yep.
We should also, we'll put it in the show notes. What book do you use, Anna?
My book is the... What's it called?
Grids and Guides.
Yes, here we go. Grids and Guides, a Notebook for Visual Thinkers, which Ellen got for me.
It's Princeton Architectural Press. You can get it from Chronicle.
I am going to stray from it for my next book because I'm working on a Grail diary. But I'll probably go back to it because I like the variety of pages that there are in it. And by the time I'm done taping stuff into my book, it usually grows to twice the size.
Yeah, that's about right.
It has to be held closed with a rubber band. But I've always been the type of person that keeps stuff, like ticket stubs and programs, and it's really good for me to be able to, like, just cut a little bit of that program off and tape it in somewhere and then recycle the rest of it.
Yes, it has done wonders for our paper hoarding. I really think we have both made great strides toward commemorating the memories that we want to in the way we want to and letting things go. One of the things that I did in my planner days that I would like to reintegrate, and I need to figure out a key and write it down, is I used to keep a paper planner, and I had multiple colors of pens and assigned pen colors for specific things. So work stuff was in black, and personal stuff was in blue, and movies were in red, and books were in green, and that sort of thing. And when I started bullet journaling, I was like, I am using a black ballpoint pen so that I don't spend a lot of time searching for the pen that I need or not writing things down because I don't have the right pen. And that was very helpful. And I started using different colors of pens and carrying around a pen bag. You can see that on Instagram or in our pens episode. But I don't have a proper key. As I've moved forward in my bullet journaling, I mostly use black, but I have some blue for work, and I have some green for work, and I have some red, but I don't have a separate color for when I finish a book. I write it in my bullet journal now. That's
good for you.
I haven't been doing that very consistently, but it would be easier for me to flip through and see what books I read if I were writing the books in the same color.
Yes.
Or if I was doing movies in a particular color so that I could scan for something.
Yes.
Because it's hard to index a page day calendar the way you can index the list that you have implemented.
I just have a line in my index that says reading log, and it has 4 entries, but it has room for more.
Mm-hmm.
And I have 2 pages for movie releases because one was for, like, earlier in the year and then one was later in the year. I am looking forward to my new book, and I'm trying very hard to let go of the fact that I can't draw a straight line, even with a ruler.
Perfection. You're letting go of perfection.
Letting go of perfection. I know that it's going to be a good book, and the more beat up and imperfect it is, the more like a Grail diary it will be.
Thank you, Indiana Jones. I put this in mention in a past episode because I have seen the picture on Instagram or I tweeted it or something, and I have used rubber stamps to number pages and number my
calendars. The process
calendars.
Of watching you rubber stamp number your pages, your 300 page book, one number at a time.
Yeah. One digit at a time.
It was a multi-day process.
It really was. This is a big one. I will post a link to the book that I'm using now, which I could see myself going back to, but I, as mentioned before, have embarked on this in part to use up blank books I had been purchasing and hoarding over the years. So I need lines more than I need dots, because I don't draw as much. The dots are really good if you need flexible stuff, but because I'm mostly making lists, I like a lined journal. I currently have the Exact Compta. I can't remember the name of it. I got it from Jet Pens like 8 years ago and finally used it.
This has been good for our hoarding tendencies. We're using stickers, we're using tape, we're acquiring tape. We're using books that have been around.
We're using pens.
So what we want from you is to, if you keep a bullet journal, to let us know any tips that you want other people to know. You can talk to us on Twitter at BellwetherFriends, BellwetherFrnds. You can post on our Facebook wall. If you have any questions for us about our divergent bullet journaling techniques, we would be happy to answer them.
One of the things that multiple people talk about in bullet journal guides, you will see layouts on Pinterest, and I want to talk about this as a bullet journal fail. I found a habit tracker and I tested it out. And the way a habit tracker is described is that you make a grid and you have 31 slots in it. So you make a grid for the days of the month. And so the one for March will have a list on the side and it will have the little columns for every single day of the month, 1 through 31. And on the side, you write down flossed, did yoga, took a shower, all of the things that you want to build a habit for or want to accomplish, maybe daily, maybe weekly. And I tried it out for a month, and it felt in the end like a documentary history of failure for me. And I tweeted about it and I said, hey, those bullet journal friends, if you use a habit tracker, how do you keep it from being a documentary history of failure? And a friend of the podcast, Sophie, replied, what are you getting out of it? Because that doesn't sound like a feeling that you would like to be cultivating. And she was absolutely right. And I promptly abandoned it because that's not what I was looking for. And I have my daily, weekly, and monthly to-do lists that I can refer to. And I know in my heart whether I did yoga or not every single day. And I write it on my daily calendar if I do it. So I don't need another layer of something that is going to have lots of gaps in it or is going to otherwise not be serving my cheer, health, and goodwill.
This reminds me, there are a couple of things I am going to carry forward, which are, number one, my period tracker, because I am one of those ladies that every month is like, I don't, my stomach's upset, my back hurts, I'm mad. Oh... this last month when this happened, I looked and I counted and I was like, oh, okay.
It's true. She was not feeling 100% and she referred to this and we agreed that
the calculations were probably
accurate.
Mm-hmm. And then, lo and behold.
Yeah. Yeah. Enjoy it while it lasts, because in a few more years, there is every possibility of your body deciding, you know what, calendars don't mean anything.
They mean nothing. Then the other one is I am the kind of person that has just a million little things that are annoying them, but not all at the same time, like my shoulder hurts, or the top of my head is tingly, or...
the cramp in your leg.
There's a cramp in my leg. Yes, thank you. I'm glad that you pay attention sometimes. That's very sweet of you. Anyway, and so I decided that I would just have a symptom tracker where if it annoyed me enough or if I registered it, I would write down the date and I would like check it off on the little column. There are like 10 columns of annoying little things. So I will carry forward my symptom tracker too, so that when I go to the doctor, I can be like, these things have been annoying me for the past year.
This is something that can be helpful if you have a chronic condition or if you are trying to figure out if you have a chronic condition. I think that these are good things to consider. I have really appreciated some of the things that I've seen either on Pinterest or in bullet journaling books where you can have like a mood tracker.
Yeah.
Where you can do a different color. You can create a key and you can use a habit tracker type of thing for the year. And you can color in, today I was happy, today I was not happy. And that's something that can provide you with a visual representation of your outlook if your mood is something that you want to track. Or if there are other things that you want to track. Like, I think that I could have a happier result from a habit tracker if I did things like, did I eat breakfast today? In terms of like viewing my outlook rather than trying to like have my accomplishments, because I don't have a value on whether I ate breakfast or not in the same way that I do whether I emptied the dishwasher or not. So maybe I need to use a habit tracker for things that would provide me information.
I feel like between the two of us, we have a dangerous, we could track everything.
Yeah.
And and that's where I think, like, I can let go of the TV show episode tracker, because it's not satisfying to be like, well, I guess I can cross off two X-Files episodes of these 150 things that I have listed.
Right.
Because we do plenty of things, mostly movie watching, that it would be more fun to set up a tracker for.
Yeah. And we have a spreadsheet that keeps track of our movie watching.
We do. So your mileage will probably vary.
And that's the whole thing about it, is that you do what you want in the way that it works for you. What was the quote that you were telling me of hers? Well, how should I do this? Well, you should do it like this, or you should do it like this.
Whatever. Yeah, this book, which we will link to again in the show notes, is very good at reminding you, reinforcing that, you know, it is really up to what you want it to do. And for those of us that have purchased any number of planners and then failed to ever do anything with them, this is good, because you can, if you are only making a list once a week, then you can make a list once a week. Or if you need it to be every day, then you can make it every day. Or if you just need somewhere to put all your ticket stubs and the occasional note.
Yeah.
That works too. And as for the bullets themselves.
Oh, right. We don't do that very much.
I do.
Oh, right, in your list, because you do the weekly list.
So I do a weekly list, and this, the Dog Journaling book, she says, she has this person, this imaginary person that's like, but I want to cross things out. And she's like, that's okay, you can cross things out too if you want, that's fine. Like, do what you want. What I have adopted is, you put a bullet next to each item, and then you either put an X through it when it's done, or you put a little carrot moving it to the next week if it's migrating. So I can look at a past list and be like, well, I got about 50% of the stuff on that list done, and I move the rest of it over. Which is good for me to see the X's that I've finished something.
And I have fallen off of having a to-do list on a given day, and it is something that I think I might benefit from, and I might try to reintegrate, because there are usually things that I need to accomplish at work or at home on any given day. And when I have written them down, it's been beneficial, and I can put a little bullet next to it. But I also use my bullet journal as a bit of a diary. And so, like I said, I tend to write things that I accomplished down more than I write things that I need to accomplish, because lists of things that I don't accomplish, I like them on a loose piece of paper that I'm going to throw away.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm using it mostly as, like, for my work list, I keep migrating things that I know I have to deal with before the end of the fiscal year.
Oh, fiscal year. Yeah, me too.
And I sometimes, like, we'll put a little teeny star sticker or otherwise emphasize a thing that needs to get done, like, first.
Yep.
But I'm the kind of person that if it drops off my to-do list, it's as if I've never heard of it.
Yes, we do. I've seen that with our grocery lists.
Right, I've never... That's, what do you mean I was supposed to register for MLA?
I've never heard of tortillas.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put an X through record podcast here.
Excellent. Sounds good.
And then
good.
I'm going to write a new bullet that says edit podcast.
Okay, that sounds good. This is how it works for you.
And then I'm going to write another bullet that says post podcast. There we go. I've just crossed one thing off and added two things. This is how my life works.
This is how it works.
Do you have a musical obsession, Aileen?
I do, but I share it with you.
Oh, great. It's a joint musical obsession. It is Flo Rida's My House, which has a really great opening beat.
Riff. It has a really great beat through the whole thing. But wait, you need to say why it is our musical obsession.
Something happened on Jeopardy. And
it was the answer on Jeopardy.
Or was it the question?
It might have been the question or the answer. I don't know. But it was Flo Rida, My House.
Right, here's how it starts. How can you resist such a thing?
I love something with electronic finger snapping.
How do you know it's electronic? It could be real.
It could be real. Are you gonna give them the part of the song that they might know?
No.
We'll put it on the playlist. In the
Musical Obsessions playlist. Maybe it's Jarvis snapping.
It's probably Jarvis. Do you have a regular obsession, Anna?
I do. My obsession, and it is a genuine obsession, not one of these so-called obsessions that I don't ever think about again, which is with flavored syrups, because the art house cinema that we go to is so art housey that they offer Italian sodas made with flavored syrups and wine and beer and all sorts of things. So I first got a mandarin orange one, and then I got a peach one, and you had a lemon one. And I was like, we need to have these at home so we can have syrup anytime. Basically, it's just very sweet flavoring plus seltzer water equals delicious beverage.
So I've been obsessed with Italian sodas in the past, and I used to have about 8 different flavored syrups in my house at all times. Right. So I was super on board with this. I was like, yes, you should try the Italian sodas at the Art House Cinema, and yes, we should go see if we could find them and we could have them at home because they're
way cheaper.
They're cheaper. Well, and you control it.
Yeah.
You know, you can make it, like, super heavy and syrupy if that's what you want. Or you can have it. Your massage parlors.
Yeah, the Italian soda at the Art House Cinema is $4. And the bottle of syrup is $10. So my cheap heart
wants to have them at home.
Wants to have them at home. And also, we have discovered some flavors online that they don't have at the Art House Cinema that we
discovered a flavor in the store.
Right.
We found, you know, the big fancy wine and liquor emporium had them, and they have them in the coffee aisle where they have hazelnut and coconut and all that stuff. But then over in the liqueur aisle, they had some, or with the mixers or something.
Fruity, yeah.
They had fruity stuff. So we got raspberry and we got lavender, which I really love.
And we're gonna branch out tomorrow. So there are basically two big brands. There's Tarani.
Tarani.
And Monin or Mona, who knows?
Mona.
So check back. We may have acquired 6 more bottles of syrup and have nowhere to put them.
I used to get Tarani syrups at World Market, and we will be in the part of our state that has a World Market
in May.
In May. So we will be checking out their holdings, and they have Monin at our liquor emporium. So my obsession, I'm so glad you asked, is pistachios, which is another revisited obsession. I used to eat pistachios all the time, and I used to get my thumb would be tender from prying them open because
pistachio
I ate so many
thumb?
Of them. I would get pistachio thumb.
I used to get Nintendo thumb, but pistachio thumb I have not heard of.
And then I discovered that you could buy pistachio nut meats where somebody else had already opened
them.
That does not slow me down enough to, eat them. So I bought some at Trader Joe's, and I think I ate the pound bag in about 30 hours. And so when we were at Costco at the weekend, I got a 3-pound bag of regular and a 3-pound bag of salt and pepper.
Have we opened the salt and pepper?
Not yet.
Ugh.
Yeah, so we're going to have those, and those will be Anna's obsession next time
Probably.
We meet, because it's super exciting, and I am hoping we'll wrap up soon so I can eat some more pistachios.
Yeah, we have to wrap up so we can buy some flavored syrups.
Definitely.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on Twitter at BellwetherFriends, BellwetherFrends. You can find us on Facebook. We're on Tumblr. If you feel the urge, you can look us up on iTunes and leave us a review. I'm Anna, and you can find me online at Helga Grace, HelgaGrace.
I'm Aline, and you can find me on Twitter at Surly Spice, SurlySpice.
And our In and Out music was provided by Julie Jurgens. You can find her on Twitter at Hi Miss Julie, HimissJulie. Bye.
Bye.